We're beginning here on the top of Nun Bet Amud Aleph, two lines down. The Gemara's continue to discuss the machloket we saw yesterday between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, where Beit Hillel says that we first make the bracha al hayayin and then afterwards al kiddush hayom, and Beit Shammai says just the opposite, that first you make the bracha al kiddush hayom and only afterwards do you make the bracha al hayayin. The Gemara now is challenging that underlying position of Beit Shammai and says v'savrei Beit Shammai the birkat hayom adifa. Does Beit Shammai really believe that birkat hayom takes precedence when you have it in competition with the yayin? Batanya, don't we have a brayta that seems to indicate otherwise? Hanichnas lebeito b'motzei Shabbat, someone returns home after Shabbat, mevarech al hayayin, bala me'or, bala b'samim, v'achar kach omer havdala. So when it comes to making havdala al hakos, you first make the brach on the wine, then you make it on the eish, then afterwards on the smelling of the b'samim, and only last you make it on havdala. Assuming that havdala is similar to kiddush hayom, over here you have the yibrikat hayayin going before the kiddush hayom, or over here what is havdala. So why is it that Beit Shammai believes by Kiddush it's one way, when we have a Braita that seems to indicate otherwise with regards to Havdalah? Now the Braita continues on another topic, which is, Ein lo ela kos echad, he only has one kos, menucho la'achar mezon, then he leaves it till after he's finished his meal, u'mishal shalan kulan le'acharav, and then he links them together, he chains them afterwards, which means that he first makes the Birkat HaMazon, and then afterwards he follows the procedure above, which is alayayin v'alamor v'ala Bisamim, and then you say Havdalah. That's because he only has one kos, and he has to bench alakos, and he has to say Havdalah alakos. So in order to facilitate that, he groups them together, and he waits to make Havdalah until after he has eaten. Now, the Baal Yad Tosafot asks over here, how is that possible? Hachamashma shemuta litom kodem Havdalah. Makes it sound like over here you're allowed to eat before Havdalah, and that is not the impression you get in the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, whereby one is not allowed to eat before they made Havdalah ala kos. And it brings a story over there of a Meimar who fasted all night. He didn't eat on Motzei Shabbat because he was waiting to have a kos Havdalah until Sunday morning. Tosafot over here gives a number of answers. One is, maybe Shani HaMeimar she'a savur she'a lo kos l'machar. Meimar knew that he would get a kos Havdalah the next day, therefore he waited for Havdalah. But in our situation over here, they have no belief that they're going to get another kos. Therefore you have to deal with benching ala kos and Havdalah, and therefore we permit you in this situation to eat, and that's possibly in any case where you don't think you're going to get a kos for Havdalah, maybe you are permitted to eat. The Easter of Tima might only be in a case where you know you're going to get a kos Shel Havdalah. The other possibility Tosafot raises is that maybe a Meimar machmir latzmo haya. Maybe he was just machmir on himself, but that's not the Ikar Halacha. The Ikar Halacha is like our Gemara, that maybe that you can eat before benching. And the tour in Siman Kufpe Bed actually brings this Halacha, that if a person does not have a kos for Birkat HaMazon, but he does see in the future he will have a kos, that he should skip the meal and wait till he has a kos in order to bench ala kos. And Magen Avraham says, I don't know where the Torah got this from, because we know that there's an Isur to eat before Havdalah, but where is there ever an Isur to eat when you don't have a kos for Birkat HaMazon? The Machatzita Shekel over there challenges the Magen Avraham and says it's from our Gemara. Over here you see that in order to facilitate bracha ala kos, we allow you to eat before Havdalah. That shows you that Birkat HaMazon is more chamur than Havdalah, and that's the source for the Torah's psak, that if you have the ability to get a kos, you should skip the meal until you can be benching ala kos. Because we see that Birkat HaMazon ala kos is more chamur than Havdalah, because we permit you to eat in order to bench ala kos, even though that's not normally permitted for Havdalah. And that shows you, just like by Havdalah, if you don't have a kos, you don't eat. So too by Birkat HaMazon, if you don't have a kos, you shouldn't eat. Achronim disagree with that by saying that the reason that over here you wait until after the mazon and you eat before Havdalah is not because Birkat HaMazon is more chamur, but rather because the fact that you need the kos for Birkat HaMazon makes as if you don't have a kos for Havdalah. And we already noted, like the Baal Yad Tosafot said, if you don't have a kos for Havdalah, in the end you can't eat. And since that is the scenario here, the permissibility to eat before Havdalah is because you don't have a kos Havdalah. Why don't you have a kos Havdalah? It's because you need it for Birkat HaMazon. But not to suggest that there is a hierarchy that Birkat HaMazon is more important than Havdalah. And if that's the case, you can't learn from this Gemara that just like you're not allowed to eat before Havdalah, you're not allowed to eat before Birkat HaMazon. And that's the reasoning behind the Magen Avraham's question on the Torah's position that one may not eat or has to skip a meal if they anticipate getting a kos that they can bench on in the future. Because as the Magen Avraham says, we never find any Isser to eat when you can't bench on a kos. You just bench without a kos if you don't have a kos in that situation. So now the Gemara asks a question on the Braita that we just brought. Behind me, my debate Shammai. How do you know that the author of that Braita that we just brought is Beit Shammai? Dilma Beit Hillel. Maybe it's the position of Beit Hillel. Where it says Lo Sakadatko, that we wouldn't have considered Diktani Me'or V'achar Kach B'samim. It says in the Braita that first you make a bracha on Eish, and then afterwards you make it on B'samim. Man Shmaitle De'itle Ha'isvoro. Who is the one that has that order or that logic? Beit Shammai. That is the position of Beit Shammai. Ditanya, we have a Braita, Amrei Be'uda. Lo Nechlechu Beit Shammai U'Beit Hillel Alamazon Shibitchila. In this situation where you're both benching and you're making Havdalah together on the same coast, everybody agrees that you first bench, and everybody agrees that Havdalah goes at the end. The only question you have over here is Ala Ma'or Vala B'samim, the order in which you do the Bracha La'esh and the Bracha Al B'samim. Beit Shammai Omrim Ma'or V'achar Kach B'samim. Beit Shammai says you do the first the bracha on the Eish, and then afterwards you do the bracha on the Misamim. And Rabbeinu Yonah also suggests, and the Ritva also suggests something similar later on in the Gemara, because the Or is the first thing that you get Hana from, so that gets priority in terms of the Birkat Hanenin, or the bracha al Ha'or, and therefore you make the bracha on the Or, and then after Bisamim. Beit Hillel Omrim Bisamim V'achar Kach Me'or. Since Bisamim is associated with the Shabbat, it's supposed to relieve the person from the despondency of the leaving Shabbat, and therefore it's connected to Shabbat more closely than the Me'or, which is really connected to Motzei Shabbat, which is the first time that Adam Rishon lit a fire. So therefore the order should be B'samim, and then Achar Kach Me'or. So that's the only thing they argue about. They also could possibly argue about the nature of the mitzvah of Me'or. Is Me'or a Birkat HaNenin? And that's possibly what Beit Shammai is saying, and therefore it should get precedence. Or is Birkat HaMe'or a Birkat Hoda'ah, and therefore maybe there's no issue in terms of whether you got Hana from it first or not? That's another possible way to explain their Machloket. But the Gemara is saying, it's clear from here, the one who has the opinion that Me'or goes before Bisamim, which is what was in the Braita that we quoted before, is Beit Shammai. And therefore, that must be that it is Beit Shammai, the author of the Braita that we quoted before. Mar says, we might debate Shammai, he, Balibi de Rabbi Yehuda. The Braita Tosefta that you just brought over here is the version of the Machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, according to Rabbi Yehuda. But maybe it's Dilbeil Beit Hillel, he, Balibi de Rabbi Meir. Maybe it's really the position of Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Meir, who's the author of our Mishnah. Maybe it's Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Meir, because both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in our Mishnah have ner before Bisamim. So Mar says, Lo Sakadatcha, you wouldn't have thought to assume that it was Beit Hillel according to Rabbi Meir, the way the version that's in our Mishnah, Tatani Hocha, Bimatznitin, because in our Mishnah it says, Beit Shammai Omrim, ner, Umazon, Bisamim, Vavdalah, Beit Hillel Omrim, ner, Ubisamim, Mazon, Vavdalah, Vahatam Babrai, Tatani, Im Einlo, Elokos Echad, Menuchol, Lachar, Mazon, Umishal Shalan, Kulan, Lacharav. So based on the Braita that we brought before, it's clear that Mazon goes first. And in the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Meir, neither Beit Hillel nor Beit Shammai has Mazon going first. Shma Mina, it must be that it's Beit Shammai, Valibid Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who has that view that Mazon goes first. And therefore, in that view of Rabbi Yehuda, where Mazon goes first, which seems to be the case in the Braita that we just brought, because it says, Mishal Shalan Acharav, that everything is then linked or successive to the Birkat HaMazon that you did, it must be according to Beit Shammai, because in that Machloket, in the view of Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Shammai is the only one who has Ner and then Bisamim. And so then we've then concluded that that Braita that we quoted above is Beit Shammai, and the problem is Mikom Makom Kasha. We have a problem from that Braita, because Beit Shammai in that Braita says you make a bracha on the Yayin, and then afterwards Havdalah, versus at the opening of Shabbat, where you make Kiddush, and then you make the bracha aleyayin. Gemara says, Kasabri Beit Shammai, Shani Iyula Yoma, Miafuke Yoma. Makes a difference between whether you're bringing in the Kedushat HaShabbat, or you're exiting from Shabbat. Iyula Yoma, Kama Demakdamina, Le Odif. On the way in, faster you can bring in Shabbat, the better it is, or it makes more sense. So you want to be Mikadesh the Shabbat as early as possible, and therefore you would put the bracha of Kiddush Hayom before the bracha al Yayin. Now that in of itself is not a reason to put Kiddush Hayom before the Yayin, and that's why you need the other reasons that we saw in yesterday's daf as to why Beit Shammai gives priority to Kiddush Hayom al Yayin. But nevertheless, it's conceptually supporting to the idea of being Mikadesh the Yom, and then afterwards making the bracha on the Yayin. On the other hand, by a Fuke Yoma, Kama Demachrina Le Adif. On the way out, the longer you keep Shabbat, the better off it is. So that is that, what we say in the Zmirot on Friday night, Mimaharim lavo, umachrin latzeit. We want to bring it in as fast as possible, and delay and tarry as much as possible, on the way out. So therefore, we want to delay Havdalah as much as possible. So even though technically Beit Shammai would have thought that, it would have thought in this case that Kiddush Hayom or Havdalah should have preceded Yayin, nevertheless, there's a mitigating factor, which is that we want to be Ma'acher the Shabbat as much as possible, and therefore we push Havdalah as far back as possible. So therefore, we make, in this case, the Birkat HaYayin first, and then the Havdalah. So it doesn't look like it's a burden to us to keep the Shabbat. And this is manifest in a number of halachot, one of which is by Sfirat Omer, that we count Sfirat Omer before you make Havdalah in Shul, as well as the fact that on Motzei Shabbat of Chanukah, we light the Chanukah candles before we make Havdalah. So even though it's interesting in that case because you're still doing Malacha beforehand, nevertheless, we try to postpone Havdalah as long as possible in order to extend the Shabbat or the Kedushat HaShabbat. And that's influential over here, that even though Beit Shammai believes by Kiddush that Kiddush HaYom goes first, nevertheless, by Havdalah, the bracha aliyayin will go first. Agmar says, V'savrei Beit Shammai birkat hamazon tuna kos. The underlying assumption in that braita is that benching requires a kos. And that's why if you have only one kos, you wait till after you eat, then you bench, and then you do the remainder of the brachot of Havdalah. But that's because it assumes that you need to have a kos for benching. Now the truth is that the Gemara could ask the same question from the Mishnah itself, because in the Mishnah itself, it brings also that Beit Shammai seemingly has a requirement for yayin ala mazon in the case where you're benching and saying Havdalah together, what is the order? So why didn't the Gemara just bring the question from the Mishnah? So the Ravid suggests that that's because the case in the Mishnah is not a case where he's eating on Motzei Shabbat, rather a case where he was eating on Shabbat, and it was his sudash lishit that continued into Motzei Shabbat, and therefore he's benching and saying Havdalah together, but it's a case where the chiyuv of benching already came before the issue of Havdalah. And in that case, Beit Shammai agrees that if you're going to have to bench and say Havdalah, then you should do it ala kos. Or the way that the Rashba explains it, that our Mishnah is not telling you you have to do it, but it's saying if you would like to do it, bench ala kos, this would be the way to do it. On the other hand, the way that the Braita lays it out is that it's an obligation to do this way if you only have one kos. That's why the Gemara challenges Beit Shammai from the Braita and not from our Mishnah. Vatanan is our mission over here that seems to indicate otherwise. Hatan, balem yayin achar mazon. They bring wine after the meal. Em sham el oto kos. If you only have that kos, Beit Shammai omrim, mivarech al yayin. Achar kach mivarech al mazon. You first make the brach al yayin, and then afterwards you bench. My love, de mivarech ilavei. Vishatilei. Doesn't it make sense that what they're saying now is that you make the brach on it, then you drink it? Mara says, no. Dimavarech levei umonichlei. Case where he made the brach on the yayin, and then he waits till after benching. Had it been that he just made the brach and drank it, then it would have sounded from that that there is no din of benching ala kos, because you drank the kos before you ever benched. Then why would the other braita indicate there's a necessity for benching ala kos? Gemara says, that's not a problem. You make the birkat ha-yayin, and then afterwards you make kiddush, similar to the way we do with kiddush according to Beit Hillel. So over here, by birkat ha-mazon, according to Beit Shammai, you're going to make a brocha on the yayin, and then afterwards you're going to continue to bench. Mar says, how can you do that? Ha amar mar, amivarech, charech shi'itom. Anybody makes a brocha has to taste from it. Now, the general principle here is brought in the case of birkat ha-mitzvah, when you're talking about kiddush, Havdalah, that the person who makes the birkat ha-mitzvah needs to drink. And since you have Havdalah in this series, then you would have to drink before you benched. On the other hand, Rashi claims over here, Balahem, that the wine that came here in this scenario does not involve Havdalah. This is Kol Yemot HaShana. And therefore Rashi is saying that even if it's Birkat HaNenin, you need to be Toim. You have to drink. If you have to drink for Birkat HaMitzvot, where there's no inherent necessity to drink because you're just doing ala kos because of the Chashivut, the Shira that we spoke about previously, then certainly in a case where you're making the Bracha because it's a Birkat HaNenin, that you certainly have to drink afterwards. The person who makes the Bracha Aliyayin needs to taste it. Now, those who are Divrei Matzkel, Rabbi Yoshua at the top of the Amud, note, how is this different than cases like we just said before, Kiddush, Havdalah, where we make Bori Pri HaGofen, and then we say the Birkat HaKiddush, or we say the Birkat Havdalah, and we don't say that you have to taste it in between. But over here, if you made a Bori Pri HaGofen, we're assuming you would have to taste it before benching. So tell us what it says, V'yesh Lamar, Deichi Navid. What are you going to do? By Birkat HaMazon, the problem is that it is a closing of the meal. It's the finishing off or completion of the meal. And therefore, if you make a Bori Pri HaGofen before that, and then you bench and you say Birkat HaMazon, you're closing everything that you did before, and therefore the Bori Pri HaGafen you had before would be nullified. Therefore, we would assume that you have to make the Bori Pri HaGafen afterwards. On the other hand, Kiddush and Avdalah, the nature of those brachot is different. And that is because when it comes to Kiddush and Avdalah, by Kiddush for sure, it's an introduction to the meal. So the assumption is that the Kiddush is not a cutoff, but rather a beginning. And even by Avdalah, even though you don't have to eat a meal afterwards, nevertheless, it is what permits you to eat afterwards. And therefore, we see it as a lead-in to a meal rather than the termination of a meal. And therefore, by the case of Birkat HaMazon, had you said Bori Pri HaGafen before the benching, we would assume that you have to drink before you start benching. Otherwise, there's nothing upon which the bracha can be chal. The Gemara says, okay, the timely that he drank. V'amar mar tamo pigamo. If you drink from it, then you make it into a kos pagum, which means that it's no longer valid to be used for a kos shel brocha. And here you have benching and Avdalah that are upcoming. So drinking from the kos is going to disqualify the kos. The time lay be a day. He tastes it through his hand by taking some of the wine out, not by drinking from it, but either pouring it out to another cup, taking a spoon, using his finger and taking out the wine and tasting the wine that way. So therefore it's not a kos pagum. And in that way, Beit Shammai would accomplish the ability to say the Bori Pri HaGafen before the benching, still have you taste from it, and yet still have it be that there's a chiyuv to bench ala kos because the kos is still around for you to bench on, and then later on say Havdalah in a case where there's also Havdalah involved. So now the Gemara says, how can you take off of the kosher brocha? Because Amar Mar kosher brocha tzarech shiur. Don't you need a minimum shiur in order to have a kosher brocha? There's a deficit now because you took some of the wine to taste it. Va'aka pochitle mishiure. You now reduced it below that threshold amount. It says the nafish le tvei mishiure. It's a case where the kos has more than the minimum shiur that you would require. Never, whatever you took out doesn't bring it below that threshold. Va'im ein sham elo to kos ktani. Isn't the whole scenario here where you only have one kos, and that's why you're benching and saying Havdalah over the same kos? Mar says, yeah, that's right. Trei lo havi. It's true that they're not enough to have two separate kosot, one for Birkat HaMazon, one for Havdalah. We don't have two shiurim of a revi'it in order to do that. But Mechad Nofish, it still has more than one cup. So you have an excess of one cup, but not sufficient to make it into two cups. Va'atani Rabbi Chia, Beit Shammai Omrim, Mevarech Alayayin, Vishoteyu. Problem is that we have a braita from Rabbi Chia that explicitly says that you make the bracha layayin and then you drink from the cup. Unlike all the explanations we just gave about taking it out with your finger, tasting it, but not going below the sheer threshold that you need for a kosher bracha, not being pogamit. He says straight out that you drink the cup, which would imply that Beit Shammai does not require benching ala kos. It says, Trei Tanaye v'alibid Beit Shammai. You have two Tanaim. We have Rabbi Chia, who's bringing a braita whereby Beit Shammai clearly believes that Birkat HaMazon does not require a kosher bracha. But the other braita that we brought is according to Beit Shammai. And Beit Shammai in that braita does believe that Birkat HaMazon tzricha kos, or there is a kosher bracha with regards to Birkat HaMazon. So it's a machloket within the braita as to what the shita is of Beit Shammai with regards to Birkat HaMazon. That'll be influential as to whether you, first of all, you need a kos for Birkat HaMazon. Number two is when you only have one kos, how do you deal with it? Do you make the Bori Pri HaGafen, drink it, and not worry about Birkat HaMazon? Or do you first say Birkat HaMazon, and not only drink the cup afterwards, and to accomplish or satisfy the issue of Bori Pri HaGafen, you take a little taster with your finger in order to be toim, but you don't ruin it. You're not pogame the wine or the cup, and you do not take it below the requisite shiur. Now over here, the Balei HaTosafot say, Perish Rashkam, Davka the Kiddush Avdalah, Tzarech Shlo Yehei Pagum. And only for Kiddush and Avdalah do you require that the cup not be pagum, because being a kos shel bracha when you taste from it, and the wine that is residual in the cup is now wine that is pagum, and you have to depagumize it if you want to use it for Kiddush Avdalah. And in addition to that, he says, for Kiddush and Avdalah, Nami Omalan of a Makum Defshar. That's only if you can get rid of the problem of Pagum. But if you can't get rid of the problem of Pagum, then you can make the bracha even on wine that is Pagum. But Lishtot, if you just want to drink that wine, Tzarech Levarech Alav, you have to make a Bori Pri HaGafen because it's Birkat HaNenin. And it's Osur to be Nene Mi'olam Hazeh B'li Bracha. And therefore, in order to drink from it, you have to make a Bori Pri HaGafen if you're just drinking from it, not in the context of a mitzvah. Although the Meiri in Psachim Kuf Hei Amud Bet has an unusual shita that pogum is even a problem for Birkat Bori Pri HaGafen, and you can't even drink this wine until you depogumize it because you can't make Birkat Bori Pri HaGafen on it. And then Tosfot over here says the solution to the problem of pogum is either lotein the tocho mayim, is to add more water to it, or it is to pour it back into the original bottle. The way that the Shulchan Aruch frames it is because kama kama botil, as you pour it back into the wine bottle, then as the wine goes back in, it is batel to the wine that's in there that is not pagum, and therefore you can then use it afterwards. So according to the Bayit Tosafot, you have one of two solutions, either to add additional water, or in our day, wine, to the cup to make it so it's not pagum, or you have to pour it back into the original where the original bottle has more, and therefore it's batel when you pour it back in from the problem of being sherei kos, that it's a leftover of kos. That's all according to this view of the Bayit Tosafot, that not only is the kos problematic, but the wine inside of it is also problematic. On the other hand, the Rashba over here says that the wine itself is not pagum, but the kos that it's in is considered to be pagum. And therefore, according to him, adding wine or water to it will do nothing in this instance, because in that situation, it's not the problem of the yayin itself, which is in, it's the kos that is the problem. But according to them, if you just pour the wine back into the bottle, that would be fine, because the issue here is not the yayin itself, but the kos. And therefore, if you change the kos, if you put it into a wine bottle, there's not a rove of wine in that bottle. Or you pour it into a different kos, it seems to, according to them, that it'd be fine. Or the way to avoid making it into something that's pagum is to pour out of the cup and then drink from another cup. And then you can avoid the whole issue of making this pagum, not be able to fix it by adding in more wine. And you can see that in the Shulchan Aruch, that he follows this view of the Tosafot. Mechzir yayin shel kos pagum lekan kan, yayin shebekam kan kasher mishum dekama kama botil. Which only be, again, a reasoning according to the Balei HaTosafot. Though the Mishnah Berurah does bring that it only works b'diavad to pour it back into the kankan, but rather what you should do is pour a little bit of wine or new wine into it to depagamize it beforehand, and then afterwards pour it back into the kankan. And then he brings in the next halacha in Kufpe Bet, Sif Vav, Yecholim Netaken Posk Bagum, Adeshio Sifu Ma'at Yayin. As long as you add a little bit to it, V'fili Adeshio Sifu Lav Mayim. Or even if you just add some water to it. And then he brings the final halacha in Siv Zayin, which is v'shata d'chak mevrachim al kos pagum. When you're in a bind and you have no other choice, you can make a bracha on a kos pagum. Now the Rashba does bring a possibility here, according to the Raiva, that Beit Hillel argues on Beit Shammai here, and they don't allow this to take place, and that's why they have to put Birkei Be'agafen after Birkat Hamazon. One of the reasons you possibly could have thought that is because they think that this does make the kos pagum, which would then indicate if you pour something out of a cup, or you take something out with your finger, it would make the kos pagum, and that would be the view of Beit Hillel, and we would paskin that way. Despite that fact, the Rashba brings an alternative view, that Beit Hillel does not argue fundamentally on Beit Shammai and think that this makes it into a kos pagum, but rather they favor keeping the Birkat HaYayin afterwards because they want it to be as full as possible, the cup, for the kos shel brocha on Birkat HaMazon, and that's why they want you to make the Borei Pri HaGafen after Birkat HaMazon and not before Birkat HaMazon. And according to that, then both according to Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, there's no pagum caused by the pouring out some of the wine or taking out some of the wine if you don't drink directly from it, both according to Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and that's the way that the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch paskin. Okay, now the Gemara moves on within the Mishnah with the other machlokot between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. In terms of the order of what you do when you're diluting the wine, Beit Shammai says, Notlin the Adayim Rechakach Mozgim et HaKos, you wash your hands first, and then you dilute the cup. Beit Hillel Omim Mozgim et HaKos, you first pour the wine and dilute it. Rechakach Notlin the Adayim. Then only afterwards do you wash your hands. Gemara says, wants to understand what this machloket is, we bring the Tosefta, Tan Rabbanan. Beit Shammai Omim Notlin Yadayim, Rechakach Mozgim et HaKos. First wash your hands, and then you pour the wine. Shemata Omer Mozgim et HaKos, Tchila, had you poured the wine first, Gzeira Shemitamu Mashkim Shachurei HaKos, Machmat Yadav, V'yachziru V'yitamu et HaKos. The problem is that his hands that are Mitsu Avot, which are Tmeim, they have a Sheni Letuma on them, because Stam Yadayim have a Sheni Letuma until you wash them, have Netilat Yadayim. Anytime you have Hesach Adat from your hands, they have a din of Tumat Yadayim, because of that Hesach Adat, because Yadav are Askaniyotayim. And therefore we require washing in order to remove that sheni, the tuma. So over here you have a situation in which if you did not wash your hands and he's pouring the wine into the cup, there's a possibility that some of that wine or some of the liquid gets on the outside of the cup. And then when he touches the outside of the cup with his hands that are dirty, he's going to make them tmeim, those liquids. And there is halachot within the world of tuma that if you touch liquids, even though technically you're a sheni the tuma, which is the last level of tuma with regards to chulin, nevertheless, a sheni the tuma makes what's called a tchila, a rishon the tuma, out of liquids, mashkim. That is because mashkim are easily made tamei, because they don't require any priming, they don't require any hechsher the kabel tuma, and they end up becoming tamei very easily. So because of that, Chazal were mitakein or gozer, that any time something tamei, even down to the level of sheni tumah, comes into contact with the liquid, that liquid is elevated to a rishon l'tumah. But now, even given that, a rishon l'tumah cannot be mitamei kelim. Adam and kelim can only become tameim from an av hatumah. So how is it over here that these liquids that are rishon l'tumah now can make the kos tamei? So Rashi notes that there was another gzerat chachamim, that even though in general, when it comes to kelim, they cannot become tamei, elim kain, where they were touched by an av hatumah, this is an exception to the rule because we have other liquids that do have a standing of an av hatumah, and that those are the liquids that come out of a zav, a zava, or a mitzorah. Those liquids that are discharged by those individuals have a status of av hatumah. And since they have a status of av hatumah, they can be mitamei kelim. Therefore, the Chachamim made it that these liquids, even though they're only a rishon hatumah, can be mitamei the kli. And so that's what Beit Shammai is afraid of over here. Your yadayim that are sheni l'tumah will touch liquids that are on the outside of the cup. Those liquids will then become a rishon l'tumah. And then with the takanat chachamim, that when you have a rishon l'tumah in liquids, they make the cup or the kli into something tameh, even though it shouldn't, it does because of this gezerat chachamim. And then that will end up making the kos tameh. So Gemara asks, why do you need all of this complexity to include the liquids in here? Why doesn't it just be the tamu yadayim lakos? The yadayim already ashamed of the tuma. Why can't they just make the kos tamei themselves? What do you need them to touch liquids? Yadayim shniotem. As we explained already, yadayim are in the esheni the tuma. Bein sheni yoseh shlishi b'chulin. Ella ayadei mashkim. Esheni the tuma in the world of chulin, that's the last level of tuma that you can have. You cannot make a shlishi the tuma. Shlishi the tuma is only relevant in the world of truma. And revi, the tuma is only relevant in the world of kodoshim. Over here you have yadayim that are sheni the tumah, they're not going to have any impact on a kos, because we're dealing with chulin over here. The only exception to that is when you have liquids intervening, which is what we just explained, that if you touch the liquids, they become a rishon the tumah. And adding on top of that, the gzerat chachamim, that liquids that are rishon the tumah can make a kli tameh. Now you have a kos that is tameh. And the truth is over here that ain sheni yoseh shlishi b'chulin is not really a formulation that's relevant over here, because the real problem is that you have a kli here. And ain sheni yoseh shlishi b'chulin is really a din in ochlim, because ochlim can reach levels of rishon sheni the tumah, and then in truma and kodashim reach shlishi and revi. Kelim don't have any shaykhut to tumah at these low levels. The real question of the Gemara is, how do you get a kli to be tamei if you don't have an ava tumah here? The real answer as to why the yadayim don't affect the kli is because it can't make a kli tamei, elim ken you're an ava tumah. So then it begs the question as to why then, when you have liquids on the outside, does it make the kli tamei? That is explained by all of what we just spoke about before, these takanot chachamim with regards to mashkim that do cause it to be mitamei the kli. That first you pour the cup, and then afterwards you wash hands. The problem is, if we let you wash your hands first, problem is that maybe the residual water from the netilat yadayim will still be on your hands. When you touch the back of the cup itself might be tamei, and then it'll make the liquid on your hands tamei. And then, if you have liquids on your hand that became tamei, they will be metemei your yadayim, because remember, liquids that become tamei from even a sheni the tumah, which this kos could be, will affect your liquids to make them tchila rishon the tumah. And then the liquids on your hand will make the hand again a sheni the tumah, and it's as if you didn't wash your hands anymore. V'nitmei kos liyadayim. Why do you need the water? Why do you need the ntilat yadayim to cause a problem? Let the kos directly be metemei liyadayim. Where it says, ain't kli metemei adam. Adam and Kelim, as we said before, can only become Tmeim from an Ava Tumah. So there's no way that a Kli, especially if it's a Sheni the Tumah, can make your hands Tameh. Where it says, V'nitme the Mashkim Shibetocho. Then if the cup is already Tameh, then why are we worried about the liquids on your hand? What about the wine that's inside of it? Why isn't that problematic that you're going to make it Tameh? Hacha B'Kli Shinitmu Achura B'Mashkim Askinan. Dealing here with another Takanat Chachamim, Gzerat Chachamim with regards to Mashkim, which is mashkim midrabanan, we said before, are mitamei kelim, even though technically they shouldn't affect the kelim, because they, even with the takanat chachamim, when they have tumah v'sheni, touches liquids, they become a rishon the tumah. It's still not a high enough level of tumah to be mitamei kelim, because in order to be mitamei kelim, you need to be an ava tumah. Nevertheless, the chachamim were gozer that they are mitamei kelim. But when they did that, they put in hekerim, that you would know that it's only tumah midrabanan, and not tumah midoraita. And that is because in general, kli cheres, a earthenware utensil, only accepts tumah internally, not externally. Any other kli accepts tuma both internally and externally. And if you get tuma externally, it affects the internal side as well. In this instance, the Chachamim made it that if the kli becomes tamei because of tuma midrabanan, which is that the mashkim that are reached on the tuma touch the kli and make it tamei because of this gzerat Chachamim, that it's similar to the mashkim of a zav, a zavah, mitzorah, that are an avatumah, then in that case, you will only be mitameh achorav, that it will only affect the outside of the kli, but tochol, tahor, the inside will remain tahor, v'gabo tameh, and the outside will be tameh. That's none. We have a mishnah in kelim that explains this. Kli shenitmu achorav b'mashkim, a kli whose outside became tameh b'mashkim, achorav tameim, the outside is tameh. According to many of the Rishonim, that's only true if the Achorayim also have a Beit Kibul, have a receptacle in them, like a goblet, which has a base that also has a receptacle, if that's called Achorayim, that can be Kabul Tuma, not just in a case where it's just the outside of the Kli. Tocho, the internal side of it. Ogno, its lip, where the lip turns over on the top. Ve'ozno, or the finger holders in the Kli. Ve'adav, or a handle, Tehorim, they remain Tehor. Because they want to give hekker that it's only tumei midrabanan, so that you won't be soreif truma and kodeshim on this, because it's only tumei derabanan, not tumei doraita. On the other hand, nitma tocho, if the mashkim make the inside kod tamei, nitma kulo, then the entire kos is tamei. So you see here, Rabbi Hillel says, the situation or the problem here is not about the internal side of the kli, because it's only the external side of the kli that is tamei. Now that the external side of the kli is tamei, it can't affect your dime directly, because the sheni the tuma doesn't affect a hand or a human being. So then, what are we worried about? We're worried about the liquids that are going to be residual on your hand from the nitilat yadayim. So the question then arises is, why doesn't Beit Shammai worry about those liquids on your hand that are residual from the nitilat yadayim? That's what Gemara says. V'amai kamiflige. What is their machloket about? Beit Shammai sabre asu lishtamesh b'kleishnit mu'achorav b'mashkim. Beit Shammai believes you're not allowed to use a kos whose external side became tamei b'mashkim through that gzerat chachamim that we've mentioned a number of times. Gzera mishum nitzotzot. Because what we're afraid of is that some of the wine, when you're pouring it, will sprinkle out onto the outside. And therefore, since they don't allow you to use a kli that is tamei on the outside, then leka lemigzar shemi yitamua mashkim shibedayim bakos. Then you don't have to worry about the residual liquid from your nitilat yadayim becoming tamei from the kos, because the kos that you have to use is tahor. So Beit Shammai, by requiring you to use a kos tahor, doesn't worry about the possibility that the coast or the external side of the coast that became tamei from liquids will then be mitamei the liquids on your residual on your hand from nitilat yadayim. Since they don't have to worry about that, then they want you to wash beforehand, because their bigger fear is that afraid of this splashing liquid that would go on the outside of the cup become tamei and then affect the yadayim, and then you'll have yadayim misua avot, tamei hands while you're eating the meal. On the other hand, Beit Hillel sabre mutar lishtamesh b'kli shenit mu'achorav b'mashkim. One is permitted to use a cup that became tamei externally with mashkim, and it's only a gzerat derabanan. Amrei nitzotzot lo shchichei. Like any takanat chachamim or gzerat chachamim, it only applies when it's a common occurrence. This is not a common occurrence for drops to spill out of the pouring that you're doing. We don't worry about these drops that come on the outside, and then they come into contact with the kos, which is tamei on the outside, and then they become tamei. And then when you touch it with your hands, they're going to make your hands tameim, and therefore them ikle meichash. The bigger problem is not the liquids from internally splashing on the outside of the cup and becoming tamei. The bigger problem is the residual liquids on your hand becoming tameim. And therefore, we prefer if you pour the wine and then you do nitilat yadayim so you don't run into that problem. And the fact that your hands might make the kos tamei, therefore we'd rather you deal with the kos and pouring the kos up front, and then afterwards do nitilat yadayim when the kos is not in the picture, because then we will ensure that your hands do not become tameim from the kos, which is a bigger worry for Beit Hillel, because they don't worry about the kos becoming tamei, because it could be tamei l'chatchila. So they worry about your hands becoming tamei, and then you'll end up eating the meal, b'yadayim misua avot, with the yadayim that really were never really washed, because the washing was not efficacious, because some of the liquid that was on it touched the kos and then became tamei again, and you're back to square one with regards to your yadayim. And then Rashi notes on the previous amud, we don't worry about the fact that your hands might have liquids on them from the eating during the meal, and then you're going to touch the cup to drink wine during the meal, because the liquids that get on your hands during the meal come from the food, and the liquids that come from food are deemed to be ochel and not mashkeh with regards to the world of tuma, and therefore ein torat mashkim alav elo torat ochel, they're considered to be ochel, not mashkim. And therefore, it's not a problem for the liquids that come on your hands during the meal. Other Rishonim, like the Ritva, don't love that interpretation, because that means if you really do come into contact with liquids during the meal, it would be problematic, according to Beit Hillel. And therefore, he opts to explain that Netilat Yadayim is different, because of the quantity of water that comes on your hands during Netilat Yadayim. That's a situation where we worry about you drying the hands properly. But liquids that come into contact with your hand during the meal, which are small amounts, that you can dry off or you can clean up easily before you touch the cup, and therefore we're not worried about there being residual liquids on your hands when you touch the kos during the meal. Then the Gemara says, Davar acher, take of netilat yadayim suda. Another thing Beit Hillel says, if you wash after you've already made the bori pri hagafen and you dealt with the wine and made the bori pri hagafen, then you have netilat yadayim immediately before the suda. The Rishonim and Arvei Psachim, those of the Rashbam over there discuss whether taking the daim, the suda, is that we want you to wash and then eat as close as possible to the washing, or is it that we want you to make birkat hamotzi as close as possible to the netilat yadayim, which has a nafkamina if you're making kiddush alapat, because there, your birkat hamotzi is going to be immediately after your netilat yadayim, but your eating is not going to be until after you finish kiddush. So that would be a nafkamina between those two reasons, but either way, Beit Hillel is saying that this has other benefits. So Mar says, my davar acher. Davar acher sounds like they're adding something additional here. What was a deficit in their first explanation? So, achi kamar lohu Beit Hillel to Beit Shammai. This is what Beit Hillel says to Beit Shammai. Lidid chud amitu asul ishtamesh b'klish acharav tameim. According to you who believe that you can't use a kos whose outside is tamei, therefore our whole chashash doesn't exist for you, the gazrina mishum nitzotot, because you don't allow someone to use a tamei cup because you're afraid of this splashing liquid that would go on the outside of the cup, become tamei, and then affect the yadayim, and then you'll have yadayim misuavot, tamei hands, while you're eating the meal. Nevertheless, afilu hachi adifa, even when you're reasoning, it's still better to wash after you pour the wine and make bori pri hagafen to take it the netilat yadayim suda. There's another benefit that comes out of this, not just the issues of tumat as to whether we argue you can use a kos or can't use a kos, and whether it's nitzotot or not nitzotot. There's a basic principle of, as Rashi says, Hilchot Su'uda, that we want Netilat Yadayim be Tekef L'Su'uda. And that we get by putting the cup of wine and the Bori Pri Hagafen before the Netilat Yadayim. So now the Gemara continues discussing the differences between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah it says, Beit Shammai Mekaneach Yadav B'Mapa U'Menichal HaShulchan. You wipe your hands on the napkin and then you can put it on the table. Beit Hillel Omim Ala Keset. You put it down on the chair or the cushion that he is sitting on. So now the Gemara discusses what's the machloket between them. Tanu Rabbanan, Beit Shammai omrim mekaneach yadav b'mapa v'nichal ha'shulchan, shim ata omer ala keset, if you allow him to put it on the pillow, the seat that he's on, gzera shem itamu mashkim shibamapa machmada keset. Maybe the liquids that are on the napkin will become tamei because of their contact with the keset, with the chair or the pillow. And then they'll come back when you pick up the napkin again. They'll be mitamei your daim, as we saw before. Liquids can be mitamei the yadayim. V'nitmei keset lemapa. Gemara says, why are you worried about the pillow being mitamei the mapa when there are liquids on it? Why can't it just be mitamei the mapa, the napkin directly? Ein kli mitamei kli. One kli can't make another kli tamei. That's not a generic principle that a kli cannot be mitamei a kli, but a kli has to be an avatuma to make another kli tamei. And in this case, we're not assuming that the keset is an avatuma, it's a lower form of tuma, and that's the case, ain't kli mitamei kli. Where it says, okay, benitmei keset legavra gufe. So forget about the napkin, you can't make the napkin tamei because it's a kli to a kli. But at least then he can make the person themselves tamei, why do you need it to go through the liquids that are on the napkin? Where it says, ain't kli mitamei adam. Same principle that we had before. Only way that an adam can become tamei is with an avatuma. And here we're dealing with a keset that is not at that level of tumah that it can be mitameh other kelim and it cannot be mitameh adam. So that's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai's principle, that we're worried about this keset being mitameh the liquids on the napkin, then that will be mitameh your daim, and then you'll have yadayim misu'avot, tameh hands while you're eating the meal. And therefore, Beit Shammai proposes that you put it on the table. Beit Hillel omrim ala keset, better to put it on the cushion or the chair, shema tomer ala shulchan. If you put it on the table, gzeres shem yitamu mashkim shem papa machmada shulchan. We're worried about the fact that the shulchan itself can be mitamei the liquids that are in the napkin. Biachzeru yitamu et ochlim. And then they will then go back and affect the food. Mar says, why don't you just worry about the fact that tamei shulchan ochlim shebetocho? Why do you need the napkin to convey the tuma? Why don't you have it just that the shulchan itself is mitamei the ochlim that are on it? We're dealing with a shulchan that is a sheni l'tuma. Ve'en sheni oseh shlishi b'chulin. As we saw already before, sheni l'tuma is the end of the line for chulin, and therefore the foods that are on the table cannot become tamei from the fact that the shulchan is a sheni, because all the foods then would be a shlishi, which is not meaningful within the world of chulin. Ela yedei mashkim. The only exception to that is through liquids, as we saw before, that liquids have these two gzerot chachamim, whereby now the liquids can become a tchila, they become a rishon l'tuma. So over here, if the shulchan is a sheni l'tuma, it'll make those liquids into a rishon l'tuma. Once they are rishon l'tuma, then they can affect ochlim on the table and make them into a sheni l'tuma. So then what is the fundamental machloka here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Both of them have worries that either the shulchan is going to be a sheni l'tuma or the keset is going to be tamei, and one of those two is going to make the liquids in the napkin tameim. So Beit Shammai savrei asur lishtamesh b'shulchan sheni. You can't use a shulchan that's a sheni l'tuma gzeir mishum ochlei truma, because we're worried about people who eat truma, and as we said before, truma does have a shlishi l'tuma. So if you use a table that's a sheni l'tuma, any truma that comes in contact with the table or is used on the table will become pasul. And so we don't want that. So in order to prevent that, we don't let anybody eat with a table that is a sheni l'tuma to protect those people that eat truma from making their truma tmeya because of the fact that their table is a sheni l'tuma. Similar to the reasoning behind why everybody washes their hands for bread, even though it's not really an issue for bread that's chulin, it's only an issue for bread that is truma. So nevertheless, in order to have the takana be upheld for the ochlei truma, they had it apply to everybody. And so to Amir, Beit Shammai says, nobody should eat on a table with a sheni l'tuma because of ochlei truma. Beit Hillel savrei mutar lishtamesh b'shulchan sheni. You're allowed to use a shulchan that is a sheni l'tuma. Ochlei truma zrizimei. People who eat truma are careful. They know that it's an issue, and therefore, they even if they have a table that's a sheni l'tuma that they use for chulin, they're not going to use it by truma, and they can take care of themselves. We don't need a broad gzeira or takanat chachamim to prevent people from using a table that is a sheni l'tuma. Davar acher, eini l'talat yadayim l'chulin min haTorah. The truth is that you do not need to wash n'talat yadayim to eat chulin min haTorah. The truth is you don't even need to wash it in order to eat truma. And that is because the whole institution of yadayim being tmeim is an institution midrabanan. That's because, again, the yadayim are askaniotayim, and so we want you to watch them beforehand because remind yourself that maybe you came into contact with tuma, or to think about where your hands were, to think about maybe if they are tmeim. But min haTorah, there's no separation in the body of an individual between his hands and the remainder of his body. Whatever your hands are, your body is. Whatever your body is, your hands are. Only midrabanan. The Rabbanan said all hands are a sheni l'tuma. So based on that, gzeirah, there is no requirement of nitilat yadayim for chulin because chulin doesn't have a shlishi l'tuma. And only by truma do you have a requirement of tilat yadayim because your sheni l'tuma can make a shlishi l'tuma. But even in that regard, it's only midrabanan because sheni l'tuma of yadayim is only a din derabanan. So the whole institution of nitilat yadayim is not min haTorah, it's only midrabanan. Yes, my davar acher. What does that add? Haki kamerlo Beit Hillel leBeit Shammai. Beit Hillel is saying to Beit Shammai, v'chi teimru ma'ishna gabe ochlim dechayshinun u'ma'ishna gabe yadayim delo chayshinun. Why are we worried about the food on the table when you have a sheni l'tuma table? We're worried about putting the napkin on the table and then making the ochlim tmeim on the table. Why don't we worry like you about putting it on the keset, on the cushion or in the chair, and then the liquids become tmei in the napkin, and then they affect the yadayim and make the yadayim tmeim? So why do we opt to worry about the shulchan over worrying about the yadayim? The answer to that is, afilu hochi ha'adifa. It's better or more concerning to us about the shulchan and the ochlim than it is about the yadayim. Better that there's a chance that the hands become tamei, which has no basis in the Torah, rather than have the ochlim, which does have a din d'oraita of tum'ah in these situations, then at least, and then protect against that. Now, according to both of them, the whole problem here is only midrabanan. Because the reason that the ochlim are going to come tamei is because the liquids in the napkin come into contact with the table. The table's a sheni l'tuma. It shouldn't affect the liquids at all. There's a gzeirat chachamim that liquids become a rishon l'tuma, and then they affect the ochlim. So it's only rabbinically that they become tamei anyway, the ochlim. But at least ochlim are mekabel tuma midoraita in a proper situation where it came from a rishon to a sheni. So even when you have a takanat chachamim, we're going to worry about the takanat chachamim. We're protecting against it because there's an ikar. There is a tzad of tumat ochlim that is doraita. Whereas by yadayim, they never can become tamei midoraita. The whole institution of washing hands and tumat yadayim is midrabanan. And so here you're protecting against a rabbinic Tumah by worrying about the fact that they might become Tamei b'Drabanan and end up being Tamei in an issue that is only rabbinically ordained. And therefore, it's better to worry about the Ochlim on the Shulchan to worry about the Yadayim on the chair. So now the Gemara moves on to the next argument in the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Mechabdim et Abayit, V'achakach Notlim Yadayim. First you sweep up the floor in the house, then you wash your hands, and Beit Shammai Omrim, Notlim Yadayim, V'achakach Mechabdim et Abayit. First you wash your hands, and then afterwards you sweep up the floor. Gemara again wants to understand what's the basis of their machloket. You sweep up the floor and then you wash your hands. If you wash your hands from mayim achronim first, all the water is going to fall on those things that are on the ground, the crumbs that are on the ground, and it's going to ruin the food on the ground. And that is bal tashchit. So we don't want you to do bal tashchit by pouring water on your hands that's going to land on the area where you just ate, where there are crumbs and leftovers of the bread that you just ate. And therefore, we prefer that you sweep up and clean up, and then only afterwards do netilat yadayim. Aval netilat yadayim beit shamai tchila lo svirlo. On the other hand, Beit Shammai says, don't wash your hands first. Maitama mishum perurim. Because of those pieces of bread that are left over that you're going to ruin when you do netilat yadayim. Betilel omrim, im shamash tamid chachamu. If the person who is the waiter is a Talmud Chacham, he doesn't literally have to be a Talmud Chacham, he just has to be someone who understands the dinim of Tumat Hara, Bal Tashchit, Hilchot Suda, Notel Perurim, Sheish Ben Kazayit. He'll pick up all the crumbs that are bigger than a Kazayit, where there is a problem of Bal Tashchit, Umeniach Perurim, Sheish Ben Kazayit, and he'll just leave behind all the things that are too small to be of interest, and therefore when you wash your hands on there and ruin them, it's not a problem of Bal Tashchit, because they weren't in consideration for being eaten anyway. Mar says, Misaile Rabbi Yochanan, that position of Beit Hillel helps or backs this position of Rabbi Yochanan, Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Perim Shein Bayim Kazayit, Mutad Abdam Biyad. When you have pieces of food or bread that are less than a Kazayit, you can ruin them by Yadayim. So you see, there's no problem about Tashchit for the smaller sizes of bread that are found there or food that are found there. As Tosfos points out over here, even according to Beit Hillel, where you're allowed to pour the water and be ma'is them, you're not allowed to walk on them based on the Gemara in Chulin that says that somebody who walks on the leftover food is a bad omen because it causes poverty, and therefore a person should be careful about that, even if you are permitted to pour the water on these items to be ma'is them and make them disgusting. It's not a problem about tashchit, it still has this other issue that is involved. Now even though in general we have a principle of chatzi shiur is asur, and over here, if a perurim is a kazayit would be problematic, then a chatzi shur should also be problematic in terms of bal tashchit. It's an isur midoraita to waste these items. And if it's problematic at a kazayit, then a chatzi kazayit should also be problematic. This goes to something we'll spend more time on in the Gemara and Shabbat, that there is a difference between a chatzi shiur, and the way that it's framed in Shabbat as a chatzi melacha. Over here, it's going to be framed as a chatzi ochel. The item to get a shame ochel needs to be a size of a kazayit. It's less than a kazayit. It's not that it's a half of a shiur of ochel. It's not ochel at all. It's not classified as ochel. And therefore, since it's not classified as ochel, there's no din of bal tashchit. There's no din of chatzi shiur. Bal tashchit is only when you ruin it from its possibility of being used as ochel, and then you make it that it's no longer viable to be used as ochel. So that's only true when it's something that would otherwise have been used as ochel. And that is the threshold of a kazayit. Either because that's only something that's worthwhile saving, or that's only something that's negdar, it's considered like ochel, and therefore bal tashchit only applies to things of a kazayit. Less than a kazayit, you can be ma'abi b'yadayim because they don't have a shame ochel, or because they're just not worth the effort to pick them up, and therefore it's not a problem bal tashchit because you want to pick them up anyway. Once again, what's the fundamental machloket here between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? Beit Hillel sabrei asur lishtamesh b'shamash amaretz. Beit Hillel thinks that you must use a Talmud Chacham or someone who's knowledgeable, not necessarily a Talmud Chacham, to be the waiter at the meal. And therefore you're not going to run into this problem of having big pieces left on the floor when you go to do mayim achronim. Beit Shammai sabrei mutar lishtamesh b'shamash amaretz. You're allowed to use a shamash amaretz. This is the one instance where we see Beit Shammai being mekil. And therefore, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chinam, Rabbi Huna, Bikulei Pirkin, Aloha Beit Hillel. The entire parak, the Aloha is like Beit Hillel. Bar Miha, the Aloha Beit Shammai. With the exception of this, the Aloha here is like Beit Shammai. All the issues of Tuma and Tara, Bal Tashchit with the Ochlim, over there in all those instances, Beit Hillel is the Kula. And so therefore we pass on like them. In this instance, Beit Shammai is the Kula, and he lets you use a Shamash Amaretz. And there, Aloha Beit Shammai, the Aloha is like Beit Shammai. Boshia solved that problem, Matne Ipcha. He had their positions reversed with regards to the matter here, and therefore Bahanami Aloha Beit Hillel. Never the Aloha would be like Beit Hillel, because Beit Hillel thinks you can use a Shamash Amaretz, and if you use a Shamash Amaretz, then you have to wait to do Mayim Achronim until after you swept up the pieces that are bigger than a Kazayit, so that you don't ruin them, you don't have a problem of Baal Tashchit. Now the Rabbeinu Yonah points out that this problem may only have been manifest in their time, like Rashi says over here, where they washed Yadayim exactly where the Shulchan was. But today, where we don't wash our Mayim Achronim exactly where the Shulchan was, either we do it on the side, or we do it into another utensil, then maybe this whole chashash doesn't exist, and you don't have to worry about sweeping the floor before you do Mayim Achronim. Although other Rishonim, like the Rashba, seem to indicate that the issue is an issue even today, and it has nothing to do with, in their time, where they put the Mayim Achronim. All right, then we go to the next machloket in the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omim Ner Umazon B'samim Abdallah. When you're benching and doing Abdallah together, what's the order? According to our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, it's Borei Morei Eish. Then you have Birkat Amazon. Then you have Borei Minei B'samim. Then you have Abdallah. Beit Hillel says you have Ner first, then B'samim, and Mazon, and then Abdallah. That's the order according to Beit Hillel. And this is all according to Rabbi Meir. We saw the alternate Braita that Rabbi Yehuda brought before. Now the Gemara explains, Rabbi Huna Bar Yehuda Ikla Bei Rabba. He went to the house of Rava. Chazil Rava the Borech Abisamim Bereishai. So he made a Borei Minei Bisamim before he made the Borei Morei Aish. Amalei Michtei Beit Shammai Ubeit Hillel Amor Lo Plige. Neither of them argue that the Ner goes before the Bisamim in our Mishnah. They both say Ner goes before Bisamim. The question is, where does Birkat Amazon fit in that sequence? The Tanya Beit Shammai Omim Ner Umazon Bisamim Vabdallah. Ubeit Hillel Omim Ner Bisamim Mazon Vabdallah. Oni Rava Bachrei Zodiv Rabbi Meir. Rabbi says it's not a problem. Then we know the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, and so is this Braita of Rabbi Huda, who's the Braita we brought on the first half of today's daf. Everybody agrees you bench first, and you do amavdil at the end. Only question is, what's the order with regards to the Eish and the Bissamim? That first you do the bracha on the Eish, and then afterwards the Bissamim. Beit Hillel Omim, Beit Samim, Rechar Kach Mor. Beit Hillel says you do the Bissamim first and then the Mor, and as we explained before, the difference has to do with that Beit Shammai favors the Or because you got a Nah from it first, and Beit Hillel favors the Bissamim because it's connected to the Shabbat. Ramar Yochanan Nagua Am ke Beit Hillel. That the Am follows the Beit Hillel, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, according to this version of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's the way we make Abdallah, that we make the Bracha Bori Pia Gafen, then we make Borei Minei B'Samim, then Borei Morei Eish, and then Havdalah in the way that Rabbi Yehuda presents Beit Hillel. And even though at the Balei Tosfot say, Nagu, in other places in Shas, means that if you do it, it's okay, but that we don't pass in that way L'Chatchila. So over here, how is it that we do this L'Chatchila? So Tosfot says, Nagu Am is only in a situation where you have other Amoraim, or other positions that are disagreeing, and then when we say Nagu Am, that's a Bidiavad. Over here, where there's no alternative given, then the Nahaguam is even lechatchilo. Alright, then we go to the next part of the Mishnah, which is the machloket as to what the proper brocha is on the Eish. Beit Shammai Omrim Shibara Me'or Ha'esh. Beit Hillel Omrim Borei Me'orei Ha'esh, which is the way that we make it, and the Gemara wants to understand the machloket. Amar Rava, Bibara, when you use the term bara, Kuli Amalo Pligei Debara Mashma, that it means past tense. Ki Pligei Biborei. Question is, when it comes to using the term Borei, Beit Shammai Savre Borei Datid Lemivra means in the future it will be created. Beit Hillel Savre Borei Nami Debora Mashma. It also has a connotation of past tense. Even though the word Borei itself cannot be used in the past tense, nevertheless, the Borei can be a Shema Etzem. It can describe a person who is a creator. And someone who is a creator created in the past, creates in the present, and creates in the future. So it has a connotation of past tense. So Meitiv Rav Yosef, Yotzer Or, Uvorei Choshech. Or Yotzer Harim, Uvorei Ruach. Borei Shemaim, Venotehem. These are all statements that we find in the Nevi'im about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. And it's obviously a reference back to the original creation. In all those instances, it's using Borei Choshech, he created darkness. Yotzer Arim, Uborei Ruach, he created the wind. Borei HaShemayim, Benoteim, he created the heavens and all that extend from them. All those are creations in the past. If that's the case, you see that the term Borei does have a past connotation. And over here, it's important to have it be in the past tense and not in the present tense, as opposed to that what we say by Hamotzi. Hamotzi had a connotation of both past tense and present and future tense. Machatzit HaShekel back in Kuf Samach Zayin Sif Katan Chet explains why you would differentiate in the between Hamotzi and the view of Beit Shammai over here of Bara based on the Yerushalmi. And that is because the bracha of Hamotzi is giving thanks to Hashem who created, still creates, and will create the items that facilitate our ability to make the bread. Whereas over here, when the bracha about the Eish is about something that happened in the past, and that is the Eish that was created by Adam HaRishon on Motzei Shabbat, as is explained by the Gemara in Makom Shenagu in Psachim, and therefore that bracha is all about the past tense, not about the present or future tense. And the Rosh Yosef in Ardaf says something similar, that it's better in other brachot to use the present tense of Borei because of the concept of that a Kodesh Baruch is Michadesh B'tuvo B'choyom Masiv Reshit, that Hashem recreates the world on a daily basis, and therefore the continuous Borei is better than the past tense when it comes to other brachot besides that of Eish. And that's why over here, El Amar of Yosef, B'barau Borei Kulei Amalo Pligi De'bara Mashma, everybody agrees that Bara and Borei are past tense because here, the bracha, or the focus of the bracha, is on the past tense, as opposed to Hamotzi, where the Rabbanim believe that not only should it be in the past tense, it should also be in the present and future tense. Now, as Tosfos points out, then why does Beit Hillel insist on using Bore instead of Bara? So they say Beit Hillel favors using Lashon HaPasuk, even though Bara is more appropriate in terms of indicating past tense. Nevertheless, since the Pasuk uses the term Bore, the creator who created in the past, and also specifically has the word Bore associated with Or and Choshech, therefore they favor using Lashon HaPasuk, even though it's not as strong an indication of past tense. So keep Ligay. So what's the machloka between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? B'me'or u'me'ore. Question is not about the Bore or Bara, but rather the Me'or or the Me'ore. Beit Shammai Sarei Chadonora Ika Benura. Beit Shammai believes that there's only a single flame fire, whereas Beit Hillel Sarei Tuvenure Ika Benura. There are multiple flames in a fire. As Rashi indicates over here, they have a shalhevet aduma, you have a red flame, livana, white flame, yirak reket, and a yellow flame. So you have all different colors inside the flame, and each one of those makes it me'orei ha'esh. Tanya Nami Ochi, and we have a bright that it supports Rabbi Yosef's contention about the machloket, amulam beit hilal beit shammai, harbei merot yesh be'or, that there are many flames inside of the fire, and therefore the focus of the machloket here is whether you say me'or, or whether you say me'orei. The Rabbi believes that me'orei over here means that the fire has multiple utilities and not just for light, and therefore it's me'orei for all the different utilities that it has, which would mean that the machlok between them is whether we're focused on the creation of light on Motzei Shabbat or on the benefits one gains from that fire that was created. Beit Hillel is focused on the hana'ah, and that has multiple uses, whereas Beit Shammai is focused on the creation of the fire, which was a single fire that was created. And the explanations of Rashi and the Raivud will have a nafkamina as to whether if a person uses the Lashona of Beit Shammai, are you Yotze? According to the Bach, you're not Yotze if you use Mo'or, and that's likely according to the view of the Raivud, because the focus of the bracha is fundamentally different between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and therefore if you use the Lashon Beit Shammai, you haven't accomplished what Beit Hillel wants. Beit Hillel is focused on the Hana'ah, Beit Shammai is focused on the creation of the Or. Other than according to the Magen Avraham, B'diavad, you're Yotze with the Lashon of Mo'or, he likely holds like Rashi, that you're making a bracha on the different flames or colors of flames that are there. And then if you mention Ma'or, you've still mentioned one of the aspects of that Or, and therefore maybe you could be Yotze Bidiavad. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots, five lines from the bottom of Nun Bet Amud Bet.